Hello everyone and welcome in to the Youth Hoops Pod presented by Pro Skills Basketball. This podcast covers a wide range of youth basketball topics, from high school and AAU basketball to college recruiting, NCAA, NBA, overseas basketball, mental health and performance, leadership, and much more. Now let's jump into today's conversation. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome back to the Youth Hoops Pod presented by Pro Skills Basketball. Chris Goodrum here, National Director here at PSB, ready to have a little more fun. As the poet Biggie said, we go on and on and on, and we got another one for you today. Excited to continue into the lane of all things high school recruitment, transitioning to the college world, what a recruitable athlete looks like. Our guest today is in our backyard here in Charlotte, North Carolina, played, graduated from Methodist College in 2011, Methodist College in good old Fayetteville, North Carolina. Current head coach at Johnson & Wells in Uptown Charlotte, as we like to call J-Woo. Before being named the head coach at Johnson & Wells, he spent 3 years at Randolph as the associate head coach under Clay Nunley, so got a lot of good experience under a wonderful head coach in Clay Nunley, and has also been on coaching staffs at Emory and Henry, Randolph, and Guilford College. Mark Slade, Coach Slade, welcome to the podcast, buddy.
Thank you for having me, Chris. I'm glad I could be on, glad I could spend some time with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely, man, absolutely. Hey, before we jump into it, you and I share a really good connection, a good friend of mine. You actually coached with him at Westchester, Coach Carrier at Charlotte Country Day. So just shout out to Coach Carrier and Charlotte Country Day and Westchester.
Yeah, for sure. That's my guy. The interesting connection with Dave is he also graduated from Methodist.
Correct.
So, but before we even linked up and started coaching together, we had that natural connection. So that's my guy.
All right, Coach, so let's jump in, and as you've been informed and, you know the kind of the type of conversations, we just want to pour into all the high school listeners, all the parents of high school listeners that are out there, and just give them more of a resource, more of a source to go to when they're trying to navigate, can my son play at the next level, what should my son be focusing on, and then when and if my son gets to the next level, what are those things that they can come to expect? And so just want to start with your current role at Johnson & Wells. I know Johnson & Wells has been kind of all over the place with what division they play in and what they belong to. Where are they at currently now within the NCAA?
Yeah, so my first year, we competed in the USCAA, which is like another branch of like the NAIA, the NCAA, and just a different segment for smaller colleges. So right now, it just got announced that we are in the exploratory phase of NCAA Division III, which essentially gives us a year to find a conference home. And then from that, after that year, once we find a conference home, it'll be a three-year provisional phase where we'll be able to potentially compete in conference championships, conference awards, and things like that. We won't be able to compete NCAA tournament-wise. So that's kind of where we're at right now. This year, you know, we'll still have the same schedule where we're playing NCAA Division I's, NCAA Division II's, NCAA Division III's, because we have that flexibility. But then once we hit the provisional, we'll start transitioning to like a full D3 schedule. So it's exciting change for the campus. It's exciting change for athletics. I think it kind of shows that the school is progressively moving forward and progressively trying to advance. You know, the school's only been here in Charlotte for 20 years, going on 21 years now. So it's exciting. It's exciting. I tell our guys all the time, it's exciting to kind of be able to, you know, start a new book and write your own chapters. You know, we've had some history in the USCAA, but to be able to say like, hey, we're the first team to do this, NCAA Division III in Johnson & Wells, is pretty exciting.
USCAA, United States Collegiate Athletic Association, just
correct,
for all the listeners. And then as you guys are diving into conferences, what conferences are you potentially looking at, or what would potentially fit you guys?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much I can say, but there are some conferences that make more sense regionally. You know, with us right now, if you look at our schedule, Chris, like our schedule is all over the place. Like, I mean, we've traveled to Pennsylvania this year. We've traveled to Tennessee. We've traveled to Virginia, you know, and there's some conferences out there in the D3 world that make more sense regionally for us travel wise. And it also gives us more of a structure to know, like, hey, conference games are X, Y, Z on these days. And so yeah, I mean, I have faith that our administration will do the right thing and figure out what makes the most sense for us.
So with JWU currently, what are the barriers of entry for any student who's also looking at potentially playing basketball?
Now, when you say barriers, are you referring to like academic standards?
Academics, athletics, you know, with D3, you have to have, you know, the NCAA eligibility. Yeah. There's no athletic scholarships, but there are kind of Pell Grants, academic scholarships, things like that.
That's a great question. I think what kind of helps the incoming recruit or incoming student kind of paint the picture. When we're doing our job as recruiters, we have to focus on kids that get it done in the classroom as well, because we don't have an athletic scholarship to say, here you go, here's, you know, school is completely taken care of. So I try to be mindful of that in the recruiting process, because I want families to feel like they're getting the best value for the school, you know? So with that being said, like, we have different tiers of academic merit money. And that just goes from your GPA, your test scores, and things like that. So we try to do our work on the front end to make sure we're recruiting the people that get it done in the classroom as well. Typically, like, anywhere from a 3.0 to a 4.0 puts you in a pretty good standing. Of course, the higher up that you go, the better academic money you'll be getting. So that's kind of like where it stands as far as like the barriers for NCAA Division III. And then once you're here, of course, you got to maintain a certain GPA to stay eligible. And we, like, for us on the men's basketball side, we have a no pass, no play kind of philosophy. So, you know, if you're failing a class, like, you're not playing until that class gets up into a passing degree. So.
Awesome. So when you look at your roster and how it's currently set, to the listeners out there, who are you recruiting? Like, who makes up your rosters? What type of players?
I mean, if you look at our roster, I would say versatility makes up our roster. Like, I like guys who can guard multiple positions, play multiple positions on the court. I'm a firm believer that players nowadays, they want to play fast, but you can't play fast with chaos. You know, it has to have some type of structure to it. And I think the way to play fast is you got guys that can do multiple things on the court, right? So, like, I mean, I tell our guys all the time, like, if you get the ball off the backboard, if you get the rebound, it's harder to stop you in transition than it is if you catch it and now you're looking for a point guard, right? So I like to have versatility, like a lot of guys that can dribble, pass, and shoot. And that's what we're kind of targeting in, you know, our classes. And I think our 2024 class, I think if you go down the list, I think, you know, you'll see that. So I would say versatility and physicality. You know, I like guys that play tough and play physical and have energy about them.
In your 2024 class, you got a guy from Latin, if I'm not mistaken, coming your way, yeah?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We're excited about him.
Nick Levy, man, he's a really good kid, really good player, really good motor. I don't think he's scratching the surface yet. I think there's a lot more left in him, and I'm excited to see how he continues to blossom. I know Coach Berger's excited, and I know Randall Clark trains him, and so I know he's been putting in a lot of work. So just excited that he's got a home in his backyard, and, you know, family and friends and everyone can come and support him. So definitely looking forward to watching him maturate under you and your coaching staff's tutelage, Coach. What about so, you know, looking at versatility, looking at, you know, being able to guard multiple positions, being able to play offensively multiple positions. Something I talk to players about a lot is, hey, if you can do multiple things on the court, you very much are a unique player that a college coaching staff is potentially going to be more interested in, right? Let's put talent aside, right? Like, of course, you've got to have the talent, the skill level to get there. That's a non-negotiable, right? Like, just because you have a good character doesn't mean you're going to get recruited. You've got to be able to play at the next level. What are those other intangibles outside of kind of the versatility that you're looking for? And this is probably gleaning a lot more from your overall experience in the college landscape. But
yeah,
talk to the listeners about, hey, cool, you've got the talent, you've got the interest. Here are the other intangibles that when you get to college, you need to be honing now so you're prepared.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Like, just like you said, the talent kind of gets you on our list. It gets you on our radar. It gets you, you know, communicating with us. But the things that kind of separate and move guys up in our recruiting list, of course, like being coachable. So like when we're out there evaluating, whether it be AAU games or coming to practices or coming to high school games, we're watching how you interact when things don't go right. We're watching you, how you react when a coach tells you that you're doing something incorrectly. And, you know, you can see the body language. Like, those are things that we evaluate. Another thing is be a great teammate. So how are you encouraging your teammates? Are you negative on them? Or are you positive? Are you encouraging? And then the last thing, I kind of took this from Clay Nunley, and it makes sense, but we want energy givers, not energy takers, right? So people that, you know, you enjoy being around, not when you walk into a room, they suck the life out of the room. And we've all been around people like that, you know. So those are the kind of things we look for in the evaluating process, and can also separate, you know, one kid from another.
In your recruiting experience and in your college coaching experience, what roles are you looking for players when they transition from high school to you, or just in that college landscape? What roles are you looking for? And I'll preface by asking a very quick question. Are you just paying attention to how many points a player scores? Because I feel like there's such a focus now on, I got to get mine. I got to score mine. If I'm not scoring, I'm not recruitable. If I'm only playing 7 minutes of a 40-minute game, or 10 minutes or 12 minutes of a 40-minute game, coach, you're damaging my recruitment ability. What are you guys evaluating when you're watching these kids from a tactical standpoint as it relates to roles that kids will be asked to play when they get into college?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, it's fit. Again, I go back to the versatility piece. But like, at the end of the day, you know, we got an incoming kid from the 2024 class that didn't start on his high school team, you know, and we're looking at his ability to play in transition, his ability to come off of ball screens, his ability to shoot the ball. So those are things that kind of like we'll look for. But I mean, I'll tell you, like, our guys will tell you this also, like, I'm real big on rebounding. And if you can rebound for your position, like, you know, that's a determinant. To me, that's a toughness thing. Like, rebounding is a toughness thing. It measures how tough you are as a team. So, I mean, the points, that's good, but it's not the determinant factor. How you play, how you compete, do you embrace competition? Do you shy away from it, or do you embrace it? And those can be things that, you know, just kind of help us throughout the evaluation process.
Looking at your experience going from high school to Methodist, and then now being in the coaching world, and, you know, seeing X amount of years of high school players transition into the college basketball world, what are some of the things that maybe they struggle with because they're just not ready for the way the game is played at the college level? Because it's completely different, right? Well, it's not completely different, but there's some stark differences to what kids experience in high school travel ball to then, boom, I'm stepping right in to a college level program, whether it's NAIA, whether it's JUCO, whether it's D3, D2, D1. There's a bunch of dudes out there, and you're no longer the best one. So what are some of those common struggles? And then what can high school athletes, 16s, 15s, 17s, what can they start doing now to prepare themselves for that?
Oh, those are great questions. I'll speak from my experience. When I went from high school senior to a college freshman, like, I thought I was ready. Like, I thought, like, I'd had it all figured out. And you get to college and you realize that you're playing against grown men. Like, you're just not physically ready. And then, like, to piggyback on your point, I think the college basketball and high school basketball, sometimes they're almost two different sports just because of, you know, the speed of the game, the intensity of the game, the physicality of the game. And then you got to throw into account that you're playing with a shot clock now, which most states don't do. So it is a little bit different, and a little bit, it takes some getting used to. I think with the shot clock, it makes guys have to make decisions a lot quicker and a lot sharper. So like from going from high school to college, like those passes that you thought might be there aren't there. Like you have to have some zip behind them. You can't bounce them on the perimeter. Like you can't float them because that's going to get tipped or deflected. Where you can probably get away with that in high school. All of your movements have to be sharp, whether you're setting up your cut to come off of a pin down or you're setting your screen. Everything has to be sharp because all the guys on the team were their dudes in high school. And then what was the second part of your question?
That's great. So what is there anything that high school athletes can do now to start acclimating and preparing themselves, even if they don't make the ultimate goal of playing in college? You still need to be progressing at the high school level as if that was a potential for you. So in your experience, is there anything that high school athletes can do now to start preparing themselves, be it for the physicality, be it for the time constraint now having a shot clock, be it for the processing speed, right, that you have to now play with? Is there anything that can help them in their high school endeavor development journey to potentially prepare for that?
Yep, I'm with you now. Have a consistent weight room program. Get with some type of trainer and tell them, hey, these are the basketball specific things that I want to improve on, whether that be flexibility, mobility, strength gain, explosiveness, plyometrics, things like that, just to kind of help yourself get better prepared. Now, you're not going to be at the level that a grown man in college is at, but you'll be more prepared. Like, I guarantee you every college incoming freshman is being told that they got to get stronger. And that's just like to help buffer yourself for that. And then to kind of help with the quickness of the game and the sharpness of the game, I would say get with a trainer or get with some type of coach that's emphasizing like quick, sharp moves. Like we watch a lot of these things on Instagram and Twitter of all these eight level moves where you're doing all these things, and that doesn't necessarily translate. Like quick, sharp moves translates. And I was taught when I was doing like the skill development stuff that bones over cones. So like the more you could simulate like the physical contact versus the cones, like that's a more beneficial drill. So find ways to kind of, if you're a point guard coming off ball screens and now you're hitting the hedge or some things like that, to where it's not just I'm attacking a cone and I'm doing five dribbles that look good on Instagram, you know? So those would be kind of like my two things to kind of recommend for that.
Bones over cones. I love it. Yeah, definitely stealing that saying.
Steal, never reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. There was another one. I forget who it was. It could have been Markle at Randolph-Macon that I was talking to. It could have been Will Coble, who plays at Randolph-Macon. One of those two said, no motor, no motion. So if you've got no motor, you have no playing motion. Nothing's going to happen for you. So definitely love that. And side note, high school basketball needs to have a shot clock. Like there is no ifs, ands, ors about it. The money's there. Stop making excuses. Let's get high school athletes a shot clock. And then second side note, when you say, bones over cones. So I coach my son's fifth grade team in addition to doing all of our PSB Elite stuff. I don't think I've ever brought a cone out. It is always small-sided games. It's always disadvantage. It's always hit the other guy. We need other people, man-to-man contact. We need to be okay touching, tagging, feeling, pushing, putting our knee in, putting our hip in. And so the more that we can replicate real live type experiences and scenarios, I agree. I just think the more that translates quicker for a player. And then on the shot clock, for everyone that's like, it's going to be tough to play. I've had the benefit of going and taking teams overseas to play with PSB, and my son in the fifth grade played last year in London on a U-12 team against other teams based out of London, and we played FIBA rules, right? And FIBA rules have a 24-second shot clock. So it's even more of a time constraint. And a lot of the parents are like, man, they're not going to be able to do it. I think in two years of playing in London with four different teams, we've maybe had four shot clock violations on a 24-second shot clock. So if your system's there and if you create and help your players be confident in their motion and their schemes and how they move, a shot clock's not going to do anything except for make the pace of play a little more fun, give you a little more possessions to work on, and really help you on the defensive end because you got to lock in.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So for seniors that maybe experience a lot of playing time, maybe, you know, are 1 through 7 on their depth chart for their high school teams, I think it's important for these guys to understand you're not going to be 1 through 7 coming into the college world. So what is your advice for high school players? Because not everyone's you know if you're being recruited to play from the jump, right? And for the vast majority of high school athletes transitioning to college, you're not being recruited to play for the jump from the jump. You're not being recruited. You're not being recruited to be the scorer, to be the alpha dog. That's just not your role. And so, what is your advice to high school athletes? Because that's a big transitional kind of pain point for players. Is, hey, now I'm 12th, 13th, 15th. For Will Coble was 17th or 18th his freshman year coming off the bench.
Right.
What is the expectation for those guys, and what is the advice for those guys?
Yeah, the biggest, I mean, I can relate because I mean, everyone that was pretty much, you know, I would say 90% of incoming freshmen have to play that backseat role. You know, there are a few outliers, of course, that go into Duke and play day one, but those are the outliers. And, you know, the way I would say encourage is just understand the patience and understand that the building blocks. I mean, it's similar to when you were a freshman in high school. Like, you had to, you know, some played JV, some were on the bench on varsity, but you had to like work your way up to understand the game and understand what's expected out of you. The biggest thing, and then the second biggest thing is, you know, make sure you embrace whatever role coach gives you, because you're not going to be able to take that next step until you embrace this role right here. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. We got a freshman from South Carolina, Ntambu Calhoun, who was a 1,000-point scorer in high school, was the man in high school, like could take whatever shot he wanted to. And he wasn't playing early on in his career. He wasn't playing early on this year. And he realized what was going to get him on the court was defense. And he embraced that. And once he embraced that, he saw the opportunities grow. And not only did the opportunities grow on the defensive side, he shot 52% from three. So, like, he found his niche to where, like, now he's playing off the ball. And he's able to come off screens and come off staggers and be in catch and shoot positions. Where in high school, you know, he had the ball in his hands 90% of the time and could take whatever shot he wants. So, you know, that's a success story where he just – found a niche, found his role, and now his role grew. So the old saying, just be a superstar in your role, whatever that may be. And then sometimes it may just be being, you know, a great practice player and bringing energy. Now, that's not to say you're always going to be that, but, like, sometimes that's what's needed for success. And that's always the tricky part in recruiting, right? Like, I'm recruiting you, I'm telling you, we think this of you, they think that of you, and then when you get here, I got to build you back up. Like, I got to say, like, no, you're not good at this. You're not good at that. You're not good at that. And then, you know, recruits come in and like, well, coach, you said I was going to be this, that, the third. And it's like, well, we got to recruit to your potential and help you get there. And we don't help you get there by being your cheerleader, right? So
I'm a huge believer in the thought, and try to preach this to our players, that listen, if you're not getting the ball as much as you want, find other ways to impact the game on both ends of the court, and I promise you the ball will find its way to you. If you can move, if you can come off screens, if you can go set screens, if you can go get rebounds, if you can go get loose balls, if you can be your team's cheerleader when they need you to be your cheerleader. So if you can find ways to impact the game, the ball will slowly start to migrate towards you, and you'll have more opportunities. So we have a guy on one of our 17U elite teams, and he kind of struggling because he's not scoring as much as he wants to score, but damn if he is not averaging 9 rebounds a game.
Yeah.
Right. And so you talk about rebounding, and I had a conversation with him. I'm like, listen, man, if you have that motor and you can go find a ball and you go hunt a ball, and you're not the biggest kid on the court, but you're averaging the most rebounds per game for us, there's a college coach that wants you. There's a place for you. And then over time, you'll be able to develop on the offensive end, and you'll get the scoring looks that you want. But for now, man, star in that role.
Yep, 100%. 100%.
So what about for our athletes now, you know, in your experience recruiting and on the recruiting trail and going to tournaments and going to high school gyms, what are some trends that you've started to notice and pick up on in your kind of your recruitment journey, being in high school gyms, being at travel basketball tournaments?
Ooh, that's a great question. I would say coaches are emphasizing spacing a lot more, space and pace a lot more. They're giving players a little bit more freedom creativity-wise. I'm seeing different types of passes that I probably wouldn't have seen probably either 2 or 3 years ago. I would just say the space, pace, and then the freedom for creativity are kind of like the trends that I've been seeing.
For our players out there, do the programs, the travel basketball programs that they play for, does that matter to you? Like, are you paying attention to how they're being coached, what they're being coached on, how their coaches engage, just all of that environment that's being created or the trust that's being created by a program?
Yeah, for sure. I think that stuff matters. In the bigger picture, like we want guys that are coachable, right? So if you know, we see some structure within the AAU programs and some discipline within the AAU programs, and yeah, that's something that can catch our eye, and then we may tune back into that program consistently. But at the end of the day, like, we see so many AAU teams, and sometimes it's just chaos to the point where, like, we can't even really evaluate what exactly is going on, because it's just so much chaos. But the ones that, and this is kind of true, because like the ones that stuff does matter to, and they treat it like a real program, are they're typically the ones that are winning, you know? And I think that goes hand in hand.
What about, so back to the trend side, Coach, what about trends that you all are noticing that maybe your coaching staff are noticing, or when you were at other programs you guys noticed that are like, hey, those are trends we don't want to see in a player or a parent?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a trickle down. So right now everybody's trying to figure out the transfer portal, right? And you know, certain people enter the transfer portals for the right reasons, some the wrong reasons, and I think it's trickling down to, I mean, you see guys posting about changing AAU teams mid-summer, or transferring multiple schools in 4 years, you know? So that's a trend that kind of like is starting to, that we're starting to see. And I think that's something that we kind of got to navigate, because I think it's here to stay. I don't think it's going anywhere. Then there was a second part of your question.
Yeah. What about like a plain or behavioral trends that are like, hey, we players don't do that, or parents don't do that?
Well, for the parents, it's more so like, let your kid be coached, right? Like, you know, we see you in the stands, we hear you in the stands, and that's not going to help your kid get recruited at all. Because if we see that, or if we hear that you're bad mouthing the coach, what are we going to think that you're going to do to us when things don't go right? Like, you're not gonna say, hey, Johnny, work through this. Like, coach is trying to help you get better. Like, when we see that, our mind automatically goes to, you know, you're not going to have our back when it's time, when your son comes to you saying, this is hard, this is challenging, what should I do, right? And the saying, it takes a village to raise a kid, like that's true in sports and athletics as well. So we kind of need, everyone needs that support. And so the parents that we see do that, like it's not encouraging for us.
What about like, character-based intangibles that you're really looking for a player on the court that you're looking to possibly recruit? What are you looking for outside of that skill set, but from a character-based behavioral, we want to see this when things go awry?
Yeah, well, you know, we want to see, like, I mean, I think it's always good to see a kid play bad. Like, see how they are when they play bad. Are they to themselves? Are they still the same energy given person when shots are falling, you know what I mean? So I think it's more telling of somebody when we're watching them and they play bad. So that's like what we look for. And then another interesting thing that kind of like is off the court, that we kind of evaluate when we're just communicating with them and getting to know them in the recruiting process, is do they value relationships? You know, because sports is a relationship based entity, right? So do you value those relationships? Because like, you're going to spend 4 years of your life with important people. Like, I got married in April, and the two best men in my wedding were college teammates. My assistant coach is a college teammate, right? So like, I can't tell you our record right off the hand, but I can tell you about the bus rides. I can tell you about the conditioning tests. I can tell you about certain practices. You know, those are what's going to stick with you. So if you're a relationship-based person, like, it's just going to grow that team togetherness, that team culture, and it's going to feel more like a brotherhood. So we, like, that's one of the things that we're evaluating as we're communicating with these individuals through the recruitment process.
Do you want a response back, or do you like being ghosted when you reach out to a player?
Oh man. Hate being ghosted. That's a quick way to kind of get down the list. Just because, like, you know, you want a level of engagedness. Like, I'm a coach of many sayings. Like, our guys will get tired of all my sayings, but how you do anything is how you do everything, right? So like, if you're on and off with me communication wise, that's how you're going to be when you get here, or that's how you're going to be with your professors, or that's how you're going to be when stuff, you know, when it's game is on the line, like, you're not going to be as urgent as you need to be. So, you know, one of the things that I kind of like, not necessarily test our recruits on, but like, when I ask you to apply, how long does it take you? Right. Like, or if I ask you, hey, we need your transcript, how long does it take you to do that? Like, that kind of gives me an indicator of, you know, how responsible this young man is, how urgent he is when someone, when a coach or when a parent or when a professor asks them to do something. Now being ghosted, it kind of like, you know, sends a message that you probably don't want to send.
How about, so advice to our current high school athletes? I'm sure you get a just barrage of highlights, emails, just those introductory, this is who I am, this is some of my highlights. What are you looking for in an introductory email from a player? And then what is advice from a college coach to our high school athletes about highlight reels?
Oh, man, that's a good one. For highlight reels, it doesn't need to be an 11-minute highlight of it. Don't include free throws, you know. But no, in all seriousness, you know, just show things that will relate to a college game. Show me that you can do catch and shoot stuff. Show me that you can get to the hole. Show me just different versatility pieces and things like that. Show me effort play. Show me some instances where you're diving on the floor for loose balls. One thing that really catches my eye is, if you know, it sounds weird, but if you're taking charges in highlights, like, if I see three charges in the highlight, I'm like, oh crap, like, no, that's a tough kid. You know what I mean? Not just a tough kid, but also has an IQ. Like, to be able to take a charge, you gotta have some type of IQ. So for the highlights, I would say keep it short and sweet, probably 2 to 3 minutes. Highlight some things that are translatable to the college game, like the catch and shoot stuff, the get into the hole, the defensive stuff, you know, and then effort plays. And then for the emails, like, when you're introducing yourself, you know, make sure you include the important things. Make sure it's not generic. Make sure, like, you've done your research on the school that you're sending it to, because we can tell that, you know, we can tell, like, you know, when you send an email, hey, I think I would really fit with your program. Well, what does my program do that you think that fits? And then, like, when you're describing what you do, be honest, like, just be very truthful with it. And then what I've always learned is that emails that have bullet points catch coaches' eyes a lot more. So, like, you know, Johnny Smith, 3.8 GPA, averaged 12 points per game, shot XYZ from the field, XYZ from the free throw line. Here's my coach's information. Here's my AAU coach's information. And here's my highlight. I've learned that catches coaches' eyes more than a long paragraph that's rambling. And
it's crazy. I've talked to kids a lot when they're going through that whole process of, hey, I'm going to start reaching out to coaches. Here's kind of the colleges that we're identifying, and I'll do the stuff on my end. And hey, you need to send an introductory email. But before you do it, if you're not familiar with the play of that program, you need to go find games. You need to go onto YouTube. You need to go watch last season. And you need, because of the same thing that you just said, if you said that you're a fit, well, how? Right? And so, like, go watch some games, see how they play, see what they're focused on. Is it inside out? Is it catch and shoot stuff? Is it a lot of motion stuff? Defensively, how are they playing? How does that fit your game? You know, like if you're a 94 foot, like, you know, baseline to baseline, I'm guarding my yard. Show that in your highlight, but also say it in that intro. I love that you guys get it done on the defensive end. I'm a dog on defense. Here's my highlights to show, you know. So I think it's think that's super important of a piece of information to our high school listeners. Do your due diligence. Just don't, you know, blankly send emails out and you have no idea about the way that those colleges play, the way that the coaches coach, any of that.
For sure, for sure. That's all helpful.
So, Coach, we're coming up to the last part, and I gave you a heads up. I apologize to all of our guests beforehand that just kind of got that hot seat without even knowing. I did give Coach Slade a heads up. I'm going to give you the mic in the mountaintop. Anything that's on your heart, anything that's on your mind, anything that you want to throw out from that mountaintop towards all the high school athletes or the basketball community at large, just anything that's on your heart.
Yeah, you know, again, I go back to my sayings, how you do anything is how you do everything. So, like, if you want to be a good basketball player, if you want to do anything well in life, you got to start with everything that's going on in your life. So right now, as a high school student, you're a student athlete. So make sure that you're doing the right things in the classroom before you even start the athletic piece of it. Make sure that you don't delay gratitude. Like, there's a lot of people in your life right now that, you know, you think that you have the time to thank them, and you don't always have that, you know. So always show, you know, appreciation when you can, and make sure that people know that they're appreciated, because that can go a long way. And then, you know, that, just enjoy the process through when you're going through it. Don't get too focused on here's where I got to be and here's where I am. Just focus on the day by day, like just get 1% better each day in something in life. And, you know, I think that goes a long way.
Listeners, in case you didn't hear what Coach Slade just said, I love this saying, don't delay gratitude. I think if we can approach our lives with a little more gratitude, be a little more joyful for the ups and downs, the pains, the successes that we experience, I think it just makes us more holistic humans and better people to serve our community. So, Coach, don't delay gratitude. I love it. Really appreciate your time, Coach. I need to get out to a workout, get out to some practices, but really appreciate just you know, the 30 minutes that you had to share, to pour into our listeners. So thank you so much for joining.
Appreciate you having me, Chris.
To our listeners, as always, really appreciate you guys listening. Drop us a comment, hit us up on DM if there's any topic that you want us to chop up, if there's anyone you want us to reach out to and talk to, let us know, and we will do everything we can to get them on the podcast. And as always, leave it all on the court.
Thank you for listening to today's conversation. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and subscribe so that you can stay tuned to future episodes. Follow us on all of our social media platforms at ProSkills Basketball on Instagram and Facebook, and at ProSkills B-Ball on Twitter. And if you'd like to find out more information about our teams, camps, clinics, or virtual basketball, check out our website at www.proskillsbasketball.com. We'll see you soon on another conversation.